Imagine for a second, right, that you're just standing in a casino.
Okay, a casino. I can picture that.
Right. And on the floor, people are placing all the usual bets. Red, black, horse A, horse B, whatever.
Just standard gambling.
Exactly. But now, imagine if those bets weren't just, predicting the future. Imagine if the absolute second a chip hits the table, the actual cost of buying a house across the country changed.
Wow. Okay, that's a big shift.
Yeah. Or like the literal price of the national debt just shifted in real time. You'd probably say, oh, well, that's crazy. The casino is just a casino. It doesn't affect the real world.
Which is usually a safe assumption, right?
Usually, yeah. But when you step into the world of global finance and specifically political prediction markets, that whole line between the casino and the global economy just completely vanishes.
It really does, just evaporates.
Yeah, and that's exactly what we're getting into today. We are looking at this wild economic research paper from May 2026. It's titled Election Probabilities and the Treasury Yield Curve, and it was written by researchers Emrehan Atu and Orhan Torol.
And it's a piece of research that fundamentally forces us to rethink how information actually moves through the world.
Totally.
Because we're basically looking at how a collective human guess, a bet, essentially programs the very algorithms that run the entire bond market.
Which is just mind-blowing to me. So the mission for our deep dive today is to explore exactly how financial markets put a literal mathematical price tag on political uncertainty.
Right.
And the researchers use high-frequency data from the 2024 U.S. presidential campaign to figure this out. It's like the ultimate laboratory. So, okay, let's unpack this.
Let's do it.
If this hypothetical casino is setting the price of a mortgage, I want to know the exact mechanics here. Like, how does a bet placed at, say, 2 in the morning actually force a Wall Street bond trader's hand by 8 in the morning?
That is the big question.
Right. So let's start with the headline discovery. What actually happens to the U.S. government's borrowing costs when a political prediction market just, shifts?
Well, to map that out, the researchers tracked Polymarket.
The crypto betting site.
Exactly. It's this massive prediction platform where people place real money wagers on real world events. So they followed the daily probability of a Trump victory throughout the entire 2024 campaign.
Okay.
And they mapped that data directly against the U.S. Treasury yield curve. And the headline finding here is just remarkably specific.
What was it?
They found that a 10 percentage point increase in Polymarket's Trump win probability corresponded to a roughly 2 basis point steepening of what we call the 2S10 slope.
Okay, let's translate some of that financial jargon for a second for all of us. The 2S10 slope is essentially just the difference between the interest rate on a 2-year U.S. Treasury bond and a 10-year U.S. Treasury bond, right?
That's right. It's the gap between short-term and long-term borrowing.
Perfect. And a basis point, just to make absolutely sure we're on the same page, is 1/100 of a percentage point.
Correct. Which, it sounds infinitesimally small.
Yeah, 0.02% doesn't sound like much of anything.
Right, but in the global bond market, where you have literal trillions of dollars moving around every day, a 2 basis point shift across the entire curve is actually a massive repricing of risk.
Wow. Okay.
But here's the most critical detail. It's about where that repricing actually happened.
Okay, I'm listening.
The researchers found that the short end of the curve, meaning, the 2-year yield and the overnight policy rate that the Federal Reserve sets, was statistically unresponsive.
It didn't move at all.
It barely twitched. Almost zero response. All the aggressive repricing, all the action happened at the 5-year, the 10-year, and the 30-year marks.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, economists call this phenomenon the maturity gradient.
The maturity gradient. Okay, I was actually trying to visualize this earlier. And the best way I can think to describe it to you, the listener, is like a really long dog leash.
Okay, a dog leash. I like that.
Yeah, so imagine the short end of the leash is just bolted securely to the wall. It's anchored firmly by the Federal Reserve's immediate policy, right? Because the Fed isn't gonna suddenly wake up and change interest rates today just because a betting market shifted overnight.
Right, they move much slower than that.
Exactly. But the long end of the leash, the 10-year and 30-year yields, that end is just running wildly around the yard, reacting to like future vibes, expectations, and whatever might happen years down the road.
That captures the shape of the yield curve perfectly, yes.
Oh, awesome.
But, a dog runs around the yard because it sees a squirrel. In this scenario, the squirrel that the long end of the curve is chasing is the threat of inflation 10 years down the road.
Ah, okay. That makes sense.
Right. What's fascinating here is that the lack of movement on the short end tells us the market was looking completely past the immediate future.
Like, they didn't care what was happening next week.
Exactly. Because if investors thought the Fed was going to hike rates tomorrow because of a political poll, that two-year yield would have spiked instantly.
But it didn't.
It didn't. The market was reacting to something much, much deeper about the long-term macroeconomic environment.
Okay, so if the short end is bolted to the wall, we really have to ask why only the long end of the leash was reacting. Like, what were investors actually afraid of or betting on 10 years out?
Well, the researchers did this really clever decomposition of the 10-year yield to look under the hood.
Let's get into the mechanics of that. How do you decompose a bond yield?
They applied a widely used financial model. It's known as the Adrian et al. 2013 decomposition.
Rolls right off the tongue.
Right. But it basically just takes a bond yield and breaks it down into its component parts to figure out, you know, why are investors demanding this specific interest rate?
Okay.
And when they ran the numbers, an incredible 95% of the 10-year yield's response was assigned to the term premium.
Okay, and the term premium being essentially the extra compensation and investor demands for taking on the risk of holding a bond for a really long time. Like, a lot can go wrong in 10 years, so you need a premium to lock your money up for that long.
That is the basic concept, yeah. But the decomposition actually goes a layer deeper.
Oh, really?
Yeah. When they looked at the nominal response of that 10-year yield, they found that 62% of it came specifically from something called break-even inflation.
Which is just the market's expectation of future inflation over that specific time period, right?
Exactly. So investors weren't just vaguely worried about the future in general. They were specifically demanding higher yields because they were pricing in higher long-term inflation.
Wow. So it was a very targeted fear.
Very targeted. And we know this because it wasn't just bond yields moving in isolation. There was this highly synchronized movement across multiple asset classes.
It was stocks and commodities.
Exactly. The paper identifies very specific cross-asset signature that occurred when the probability of a Trump win rose.
Okay. What did that look like?
Well, the U.S. dollar appreciated by 1.9% per unit shock. Financial and energy stocks actually outperformed the broader market, while things like utilities and gold underperformed.
And just to pause here, to be perfectly clear for everyone listening, the researchers aren't making a political judgment here on whose policies are better or worse.
Not at all.
Yeah, they're just objectively tracking how the algorithms are programmed to react. It's literally like a calculator outputting a result based on expected government spending.
Exactly. The authors are just observing the math. And they call this specific cross-asset movement a textbook signature of a market pricing in an unfunded fiscal expansion with higher rates regime.
Unfunded fiscal expansion. So basically borrowing to pay for stuff.
Right. It's a purely mechanical reaction. In finance, an unfunded fiscal expansion just means the market expects the government to increase spending without raising enough tax revenue to cover the cost.
So they have to put it on the national credit card.
They have to issue more debt, yeah. And when you pump more borrowed money into the economy, historically, it leads to higher inflation, right?
So the algorithms just digest the probability of that regime, and they automatically output a higher term premium and higher break-even inflation metrics. They are literally just protecting the purchasing power of the money they are lending out.
Okay, I follow that. But wait, let me push back a little here. Couldn't this just be, you know, general election anxiety?
What do you mean?
Well, elections are stressful, and uncertainty makes markets jittery no matter who is running, right?
Where?
Couldn't this just be a generic political uncertainty premium, where investors just want more money because they have no idea who's going to be in charge of the economy?
It's a fair question, but the data actually takes that a step further. It's quite a bit more specific than just generic anxiety.
How so?
To test if it was just broad fear, the researchers pulled in something called Trade Policy Uncertainty Data, or the TPU Index.
Trade Policy Uncertainty.
Oh. Yeah. This index measures how much uncertainty there is specifically regarding international trade rules and tariffs.
So they're looking at whether the market was worried about the election generally or worried about trade specifically. Right. Because if this was just generic election anxiety, the bond market should react the same way every time the election odds shifted, regardless of what the trade environment looked like.
Okay, makes sense.
But it didn't. The break-even inflation channel specifically spiked when trade policy uncertainty was high. The researchers actually split the data into quintiles, you know, from the lowest trade uncertainty to the highest.
Let me guess, the top quintile looked very different.
Vastly different. When trade uncertainty was at its absolute worst, that top quintile, the inflation panic in the bond market was nearly three times higher than when things were calm.
Three times higher. just from trade fears.
Yeah, the coefficient for the inflation response was 22.5 in the top quintile versus just 8.3 in the bottom quintile.
Wow. Okay, that makes total sense when you actually trace the mechanism. Like, it wasn't just the generic bad vibe.
No, not at all.
When investors felt there was a high chance of aggressive trade policies, like new tariffs, they knew that could disrupt supply chains. And disrupted supply chains make the cost of goods go up. When goods cost more, boom, you get inflation.
Exactly.
So the absolute moment the odds of that trade disruption went up on Polymarket, bondholders immediately demanded more protection against future inflation.
That chain reaction is the entire key to the paper. It really ties the bond market's reaction directly to a highly specific economic mechanism rather than just some vague fear of the unknown.
Okay, but here is where it gets really interesting, though. Anyone who has ever taken a basic statistics class knows the golden rule, right? Correlation does not equal causation.
Right, the classic trap.
We know the Polymarket odds and the bond yields move together. But that begs a massive chicken or egg question here. How do the researchers actually know that Polymarket was driving the bond math? Couldn't it be the other way around?
Oh, right.
Like, couldn't massive institutional bond traders be making moves in the treasury market based on their own internal data? And then, I don't know, retail bettors on Polymarket just see those bond moves and adjust their bets.
It is the absolute classic whodunit of economic data.
Right. So how did they prove it?
To solve it, the researchers used a non-trading hours decomposition.
Okay, what is that?
Well, we have to remember the physical reality of how these different markets operate. The cash treasury market, where the actual U.S. government bonds are bought and sold, operates on standard banking hours.
Like 9 to 5.
Roughly, yeah. It closes in the afternoon and opens in the morning. But Polymarket, on the other hand, is built on crypto rails.
Oh, right. Crypto never sleeps.
Exactly. It trades 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
So they looked at what happened while the bond traders were asleep?
Essentially, yes. The researchers broke down the daily probability movements on Polymarket and found that 58% of the average daily move happened overnight.
Overnight.
Yeah, specifically between 3:00 p.m. and 8:00 a.m. Eastern Time.
When the U.S. cash bond market is literally closed for business.
Which means the yields could not have caused the probability shifts on Polymarket. The cash market was totally offline, but the prediction market was awake, just digesting news, late-night debate performances, overseas polling drops, you name it.
Okay, so at 8 a.m., when the bond traders woke up, logged into their Bloomberg terminals, and, you know, had their coffee, the political odds had already moved drastically, and the bond market had to play catch-up.
Yes, and we could actually see the digital footprints of them playing catch-up in the futures market.
Really? How?
Well, there is a market for CME 10-year futures, which trades almost continuously on an electronic platform called Globex.
Okay.
And unlike the cash market, institutional trading algorithms are highly active on Globex overnight. So the researchers looked at the one-minute price data on those futures.
And what did they see?
By the time the cash treasury market opened at 8 a.m., the Globex algorithms had already priced in the overnight political shift from the prediction markets. So the information flowed from the human political bet on Polymarket into the automated futures market overnight, and then finally into the cash bond market at the morning bell.
Okay, I follow the logic there totally, but I still have a lingering doubt.
Lay it on me.
Polymarket is just one platform, right? And it's pretty heavily skewed toward crypto users. So what if this was just a weird glitch in the matrix? Like, what if some massive crypto whale was just manipulating Polymarket for fun, spending millions to move the odds, and it had absolutely nothing to do with real political sentiment? If an algorithm is just scraping Polymarket blindly, it might get tricked by one rich guy.
That's a great point. And the researchers actually controlled for that exact crypto whale theory. They didn't just rely on Polymarket. They cross-referenced their entire data set with Betfair.
Oh, Betfair. That's the traditional UK sports betting site, right?
Yes.
Oh.
Betfair is a UK-regulated peer-to-peer exchange. It operates in fiat currency. It has an entirely different regulatory regime, different settlement rules, and a completely different clientele than a crypto platform.
So it's mostly just traditional European bettors.
Right. But when the researchers ran the exact same analysis using the Betfair odds, the identical correlation appeared.
You're kidding.
The probability movements on Betfair and Polymarket had an R-value correlation of 0.87.
Wait, okay, for those of us who don't read regressions over breakfast, an R-value of 0.87 basically means these two completely separate platforms were moving in near-perfect lockstep, right?
It means they were nearly identical. You cannot manipulate two massive fundamentally different liquidity pools in lockstep like that, purely by accident.
That's wild.
It really proves this wasn't an isolated glitch on one crypto platform. It was the aggregate global human intuition about the U.S. election being priced in across completely independent venues simultaneously.
Okay, so the causation is absolutely solid. But, you know, every economic model looks like a stroke of genius on a random Tuesday in May when the markets are quiet.
Right.
The real test is what happens when the biggest data shock of the entire cycle actually hits. I'm talking about election day itself.
Oh, yes. November 5th to November 6th, 2024. That was the ultimate stress test for this model.
What happened?
Over that window, as the actual voting results rolled in, the researchers observed a 42 percentage point probability shock.
A 42-point swing in a matter of hours. I mean, that is a massive shock to the system for any financial model to absorb.
Right. And to prove their model wasn't just, you know, curve-fitting past data, meaning just adjusting the math so it perfectly fits what already happened, the researchers ran a holdout test.
Okay, what's a holdout test?
It's a really rigorous data science technique where you basically hide a piece of the data from your model. You train the model on the rest of the data, and then you ask it to predict the piece that you hid.
Ah, so they withheld the final exam.
Precisely. They trained their model using data only up to November 5th. They deliberately blinded the model to what actually happened on election day.
Okay, I love this. So what did the model guess?
Well, they fed the model that massive 42-point probability shock and asked it, based on everything you learned about inflation and term premiums over the last 2 years, what should the two S10s yield curve slope do today? The model predicted the November 6th slope would steepen by 9.0 basis points.
Okay, and what was the actual realized move in the real world when the dust settled?
The realized move was 8.0 basis points.
Are you serious? That is remarkably close for such a volatile trading day. It missed by a single basis point.
It gets better. The precision continues. The model predicted the 10-year real yield change would be 5.0 basis points. The actual realized move in the market was exactly 5.0 basis points.
Spot on. It's like the bond market was literally reading from a script written by the prediction market.
Truly.
Which, you know, leads to a bigger question about the future. What does this mean for other elections? Like, was 2024 just a weird fluke? We had highly polarized candidates. Inflation was already dominating the news cycle. Does this mathematical relationship actually hold up historically, or was this a one-time event?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, we find that 2024 was absolutely not an isolated incident.
Really? They tested other years.
They did. The researchers applied the exact same analytical test to the 2020 Biden-Trump election cycle. Back then, they used data from Predicted, which was the dominant political betting market before Polymarket really took off.
Okay, and what did they find for 2020?
When they ran the numbers, they found the exact same signature across the long end of the yield curve. The bond market repriced long-term debt based on the prediction market odds in a highly similar, statistically significant way.
Okay, so the mechanism worked in 2024, and it worked in 2020. But playing devil's advocate here, how do we know it wouldn't just work in literally any random year? Maybe bond yields just randomly correlate with betting markets all the time, regardless of whether an election is actually happening.
The researchers actually anticipated that exact critique, which is why they ran a pre-period placebo test.
A placebo test. Okay.
Yeah.
What did they look at?
They looked at the year 2019. Now, in 2019, Predicted still had a Trump win contract trading on the platform, but there was no Democratic nominee yet, there was no imminent election to price in, and the odds were just drifting aimlessly in a very narrow range. It was essentially just background noise.
Right, because nobody is making serious macroeconomic trades in 2019 based on who might win an election over a year away against an unknown opponent. The political risk wasn't really salient yet.
It lacked salience, exactly. And when they ran the model on the 2019 data, the effect was statistically zero across all maturities. The 2-year, 5-year, 10-year, and 30-year yields showed absolutely zero correlation with the prediction market.
Wow.
The mathematical signal only emerges when the political risk becomes imminent and real to institutional investors.
Okay, so bringing this all together for you, the listener, what is the core takeaway here? I think it's this. The next time you are watching the news and you hear someone mention bond yields on one channel and prediction markets on another channel, you should know that these are not separate universes.
Not at all.
They're not isolated casinos. They are highly synchronized engines. The prediction markets basically act as high-frequency, continuous political polls. And the bond market, which is the very mechanism that funds the U.S. government, instantly translates those betting odds into the literal price of future inflation and national debt.
And You know, there is one final detail that researchers briefly noted at the end of their study that really expands the scope of this whole thing.
Oh, really?
Yeah. We have been talking entirely about the United States Treasury market.
Yeah.
But global finance obviously doesn't stop at the border. So they looked at how foreign sovereign bonds reacted to the U.S. election odds.
Oh, wow. What happened when they looked overseas?
Well, they found that the German Bund, which is basically Germany's equivalent of the 10-year Treasury, was completely unaffected. They had a coefficient of essentially zero.
Okay.
But the UK 10-year gilt showed a partially significant response to the polymarket odds. It had a coefficient of 19.6, meaning the UK bond market was noticeably pricing in the US election results.
Wait, hold on. For those of us keeping track, duration spillover basically means the risk in one country is bleeding into the long-term debt of another country. So you're saying that betting odds on a US presidential election, trading on some offshore crypto platform, were directly altering the borrowing costs of the United Kingdom.
The data strongly suggests a duration spillover from the U.S. election probability directly into the U.K. sovereign debt market, yes.
That is just a wild thought to leave you with. If U.S. political prediction markets are directly wagging the tail of the U.K.'s sovereign debt market, at what point do domestic political betting platforms become accidental instruments of global monetary policy?
It's a huge question.
It completely changes how we have to think about information, betting, and debt. It's not just a casino anymore. It's the actual architecture of global finance. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the hidden machinery of the markets. Keep questioning the data, and we will see you next time.